supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and coming up later in the show, we have an intriguing question. A listener whose garden is infested with wasps. This has to be a problem, doesn't it? Wasps are threats to sting. We'll investigate this unique garden situation when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, it's a fascinating phone call show, so we're going to take that heaping helping at 1-888-346-9499. Lisa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am just fine. Thank you for asking. Where is Lisa good?
Technically, I'm good in Little Egg Harbor, New Jersey.
Right.
Or at least I was good there until Sandy came through. Lost the whole house, lost everything, all the gardens, all the landscaping, everything. So basically, I'm starting with a big pile of dirt. And actually, it's the orange fill dirt. And what I just wanted to know is I'd really like to be able to, I don't expect the house to be done until sometime in the fall.
Right.
I'd like to be able to get some things back pretty quickly because, like I said, right now it's all completely barren.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what things might grow quickly and relatively inexpensively because all the money is really going into the house, so there's not going to be a lot left over for gardens and stuff. And then also what your thoughts were about bamboo or some natural fencing and things to kind of separate me from a dirt road that runs on the side of the house.
Bamboo is always a bad idea unless you're very wealthy and you're willing to install what's called rhizome barrier, which has to be professionally installed by a landscaper. I think they're actually a very specific type of perforated plastic. You install running bamboo and you won't need a blindingly fierce storm to destroy your house. Your bamboo will lift up your new house and destroy it.
Oh, great. Okay.
And destroy it for you. Anything that's described as fast growing, easy growing, should be a flashing red light that this plant is either going to be short-lived and or a menace. What got you? Was it the ocean or the bay?
It was the bay. I actually live on the end of a little lagoon that looks out over the wetlands and the marshland, like a channel out to the bay.
Right.
So it was the storm surge there.
Right.
5.5 feet in the house.
Here's the deal. First, you want to get your house together. Then I want you to talk to your local county extension office. You've already said you're near wetlands. You're near the bay. They have restoration plans that they will share with you. They have plants that are going to do good in the brackish water that you're exposed to at times. They also have a list of plants that they're hoping you're not going to try to install because it's going to interfere with the wetlands restoration that has to go on. There are people who have plans for landscapes like yours, and they would very much like you to turn to them for input. As you know, one of the things we learned from this storm is the beach communities that had the best natural protection that had been really crazed about dunes and dune grasses are the ones that came through intact. So there are plantings and there are styles of landscaping that can not only protect you, but that can protect those nearby wetlands, which is your sump pump. There's a lot of things that haven't happened to you because they're there using water and absorbing water. The good news is that you shouldn't be planting anything now. No one should be planting anything between now and September. So this is the time to get your house together, to get a plan together, and then September and October are the perfect times to install new plantings. The plants tend to be less expensive because the nurseries don't want to carry them over, and the rate of survival is much higher when planted in the fall than in the spring.
Oh, that's great. I had no idea. So that's really great advice. Thank you.
And that's why we get the big money here, Lise.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Good luck. We're great. Glad you weren't hurt, and we hope you get to enjoy the next season unscathed.
Thanks very much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Willie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, you have a great show. I really appreciate every week listening to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. Where are you?
Redding, California, right up towards the top of the state.
Oh, so I spoke in Eureka in Humboldt County a couple of summers ago at a big outdoor festival. I was the keynote speaker at what essentially was a rock concert. Was I near you?
Well, it's about 140 miles inland from there where you were. If you looked at the top of California, California is a horseshoe of mountains, and we sat right in the middle of that horseshoe.
Well, I can tell you that there were mountains that met the ocean near Eureka. It's amazing topography in that part of the state.
Yes, yes. It's a great part of the state. And Northern California is the little-known part of California, but it's certainly beautiful and very spacious.
What can we do for Willie and a little bit of paradise up in Northern California?
Well, I have two things. One is I grew up on a 50-plus acre cattle ranch on river bottom land, beautiful soil, and most of it is cattle grazing land. And so just cows walk around on it, and they strategically fertilize it, but I've never fertilized it ever, so I've never put any chemicals on it anyway. And I just tested the soil, and it was low in nitrogen. And I was wondering about a suggestion there about what I could do to raise the nitrogen level without pumping on some chemicals.
Who tested your soil and claimed they could tell you how much nitrogen was in it?
A little test kit told me that.
Ah.
I bought it at the local garden shop, and I tested 10 different spots on the field and always came up with low nitrogen on any one of the
one of the lesser understood facts of soil testing is that soil tests will always give you relatively accurate levels of phosphorus, potassium, calcium, all those kind of hardcore elements, the ones that stay around. But nitrogen is very ephemeral. Nitrogen is in the air we breathe. So it's always constantly in motion. Every time there's a lightning strike, nitrogen in the air gets shot into the soil. Every time the soil is disturbed, soil nitrogen escapes into the air. It's a very dynamic process. And university labs, soil test labs from the big land-grant universities, will often not include nitrogen on a soil test because by the time the package gets to them, the levels could be completely different. So don't worry about that. I would not worry about a soil test that reveals low nitrogen if you got cattle pooping on the soil all the time.
Okay. Well, that's great news. The other thing that I have is blackberries.
Oh.
And when I first moved to the ranch 60 years ago, there were no blackberries, and they've slowly grown up on all the fences, and now some of them are 20 feet tall, and I probably have at least 3 or 4 acres worth of blackberries. And they're very difficult to rid myself of.
You'll never actually win. Blackberries are one of the most notorious invasive plant complaints in California. Now, here on the East Coast, they're kind of self-limiting. When they show up in people's yards, people enjoy them, and then they get a little out of hand and they pull them out or cut them back or keep them under control. But there's something about blackberries in California that they really achieve noxiousness very quickly. When the first horticultural vinegars began to be distributed, one of the very first ones was called Blackberry and Brush Killer, and it was marketed in California. So rather than pull them out, I would just keep cutting them back. That is going to exhaust the root system more than pulling them will. Cut them back as if they were a wheat crop or something. Just kind of cut them off at the soil line repeatedly. And then if you want to try to eliminate them from certain areas, during a hot and dry period, you can get one of these high-strength vinegars. Make sure you wear eye protection. Spray it on the new sprouts, and that's been shown to keep this stuff under control very well.
Okay. All right. Oh, that's great. That's great.
But don't feel bad. Blackberries are one of the worst plant problems in California.
And delicious.
Yes, and delicious. So make sure you save some of them, but that shouldn't be a problem. All right,
thank
Willie?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your show. Yes, sir. Thank you, and I will keep listening for sure.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you as a listener. You take care now.
You bet. Great show. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who planted string beans, also known as green beans or snap beans, that you'll get the best taste and production if you harvest while the pods are still on the small side, before those seeds get too big inside. Summer squash and cukes are also at their best and most productive when harvested while they're still small. Just don't go out picking your petite produce just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and when a garden full of wasps may not be a bad thing. I'm your bad thing, Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that late summer is the time to prepare to plant garlic and spring bulbs and to start pansies, salad greens, broccoli, and other cool weather lovers. Learn more at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a garden full of wasps. What a terrifying sight. Could it possibly be a good thing? We'll find out when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, we're cruising through your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Patrick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I am doing just fine, Patrick. How are you, sir?
Not bad. I'm calling you from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, excellent. What a beautiful area up there. That's a little slice of paradise.
It is. I love it out here.
What can we do for Patrick in Portland?
I have what's called an aquaponic system that is about a year old now. It's basically a 30-gallon fish tank with a gravel grow bed above it on a shelf. And I have the water pumped out of the fish tank, and it fills the grow bed until it reaches a certain level, and then there's what's called a bell siphon in it that basically creates a siphon when the water reaches a certain level and it drains the grow bed. So it fills and drains every about 8 minutes or so. And it seems to be getting really good growth on some kinds of herbs and plants and things like that. But on others, it doesn't seem to be doing so well. And I have this persistent, what I think is an aphid issue. They basically keep coming back no matter how many times I get rid of them. It seems like I get their numbers down, and then they just come back. And they've been doing this since, I think, last spring.
Right, because all this is indoors.
It is. It's an indoor system, and it's just fluorescent lights and a high-powered fluorescent spotlight on some of the plants. And right now, I've had a few different kinds of crops in there, like collard greens and basil and stuff. Mostly they're attacking this habanero pepper right now.
Oh, what a sin. Aphids are tiny insects that appear in large numbers, and they literally smother a plant. And if they reach a certain number, they will produce so much of their frass, F-R-A-S-S, which is a $20 word for bug poop, which in the aphid world is also known as honeydew. You get this black sticky stuff all over everything. Now, so you have a tank with fishies in it.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of fishies?
They're just little goldfish right now.
Okay. And on top of the tank is some sort of a growing tray.
It is. It's about the same size as the fish tank, and it's filled with the cheap volcanic gravel that you'd get from the home improvement store.
Right, like perlite. Are the roots of the plants always in the fish water, or does this pumping system water the plants every 8 minutes?
No, it fills the whole bed every 8 minutes, and then it drains down to the bottom. So the whole root system is oxygenated every time it drains.
Now, here's the big question. How easy, difficult, or impossible is it to physically remove this growing tray and take it somewhere for treatment?
It would be a bit of a task. It would be like a whole day thing. I'd have to, the plants would all mostly die, and I'd have to shovel all the growing medium out. The thing probably weighs 200 pounds.
Oh, man. So this is like you got to buy a case of beer first to get the guys to come over.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, the cure for aphids is sharp streams of water. Is that what you've been using?
I've been doing a combination between that and we have some kind of plant-based just dish soap that I dilute heavily in water, and I'll spray most of the aphids off with a sharp stream, and then I'll kind of spray the rest of them with a little bit of that soapy water, and then a few hours later rinse it off.
If you want to really try to see what insecticidal soap will do for you, I urge you to go out and buy a bottle, rather than try to make it yourself. There's a really fine line between insecticidal soap and herbicidal soap. So it sounds like you're on the right track. The cure for aphids is sharp streams of water. So you need to put something like a big towel behind this system, use a pressurized sprayer, spray all the aphids off till you can't see any aphids anymore, turn the system off during this time, wait 20 minutes, do it again. Do that like 4 times in a row. And then a light spray of true insecticidal soap. But you have to realize that once aphids get introduced into a system, they can be on the sides of the tray. They can live away from the plants. So when you do this, you want to take a day and do spray of water, real sharp spray of water. It should hurt your hand even. And do that 4 or 5 times in a row. And then I want you to really clean the sides. Go over the whole tank. Even if you don't see anything, go over it with a soapy rag. Do all the sides, all the areas you can. And then at the end, give a light spray of a true insecticidal soap, and then you're absolutely correct. Like an hour later, rinse that off. Because insecticidal soap only works by smothering the insects it hits directly, and there's no benefit in leaving the soap on the plants. And, of course, you don't want to eat soapy plants, but especially under artificial light, it can start to burn them a little bit. So eventually you may want to take this system outside and clean it, give it a month off, let them all die off and stuff, and then start fresh.
Okay, maybe that's what I got to do.
All right, Pat, but it sounds like you have an amazing system. It was great hearing about this. This sounds like a lot of fun.
It's fun. One neat little thing about it that I thought I should mention is the growth rate on some kinds of herbs and collard greens and brassicas is amazing. Like last year, I started a batch of collards from seed, and I planted half, you know, outside in some really nice potting soil that I made, and the other half I put in the system, and the stuff in the system grew like twice the speed. The stuff outside were still babies when I had adults inside. It was ridiculous. I think it's because I'm getting so much more oxygen to the roots.
Yes, that could be it. And that fish poop is powerful stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, we'll keep having...
Hey, thanks for your help, Mike.
All right, good luck, Patrick.
Have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Nicholas, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Nicholas. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good.
And where is Nicholas doing good?
Tuttle, Oklahoma, just southwest of Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay. So you're good and hot. We know that, right?
Yeah, it's been a little cooler lately, but it's about to warm up.
Okay. What can we do for Nicholas in Oklahoma?
I have a I'm a lawns, and one of my customers has a large maple in her front yard, and it shadows over part of her yard, and there's no grass that can grow at all.
Right,
there.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out she's tried everything. She's tried all kinds of different products, and she just can't get anything to work.
Okay, so you're a young man who cuts lawns in the summertime.
Yes.
It's really hard work cutting lawns in Oklahoma in the summer.
Yeah, it can be. You just got to make sure you're covered. And I'm fair-skinned, so I burn really easily, so I have to be careful with the sunscreen and stuff.
Okay. Well, you do be careful with the sunscreen. Now, Oklahoma can have two kinds of grasses, and I bet you must cut some Bermuda grass as well as some fescues and some bluegrass. Do you know what this woman has on her lawn?
It's Bermuda.
Oh, okay. So it is a warm season grass. And the Bermuda is just stopping at the shade tree line, right?
Yeah.
How big an area underneath the tree is affected?
I'd say about 15 to 20 square feet.
Okay. So
it's a very large maple.
It's a very large maple. And once you get out from a certain circle, the lawn is thriving?
Yeah, it grows very fast.
So here's the situation. Bermuda grass, as you know, is a very aggressive spreader. So typically this is a grass that fills in its own bare spots. So and normally isn't even seeded. When you put in a Bermuda grass lawn, you either lay sod or you put in sprigs or, you know, chunks of grass. This is not the worst time. It would have been better to start in the spring, but what she should do is she should acquire a nice load of compost, yard waste compost, and not cover this entire lane, but where the grass ends and the lane begins, lay an inch of compost going out like 6 inches, starting at the grass and going into the dead area, and try to keep that watered. What you want to do is trick the grass into crossing that line. And once the grass crosses that line, it will stay in place. So you give it a nice, nutritious bed of compost. Try to get it to inch over 6 inches at a pop on both sides. Be heavy with the water in that area so the grass, the underground rhizomes, will be drawn towards it. And I would not be surprised if by the end of the summer you had not coaxed the lawn to clear that gap, to cover it completely. If there's a little bit left over, there's no point in trying to do anything in the fall and winter. But again, in the spring, keep that area naturally fertile and keep it more watered than the rest. And the grass's tendency is going to be to build a bridge over top of that barren area.
Okay.
All right, Nick?
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, you you stay cool, you stay sunscreened, and I hope you make a bundle of money this summer.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, man.
I will. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Lisa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing good.
And
I'm calling because I have a beautiful fig tree in my backyard. I thought I did everything right so that it would fruit for me. The very first year I put it in, actually, my friend dug it out of his garden because it wouldn't fruit, and he said whatever needed some special conditions. And I had, like, the perfect place, like, shielded from the north winds, kind of inside of a corner, but still gets plenty of sunlight. And I even went so far as last year protecting the bush with some burlap and filling it with leaves so that it would, you know, be extra special warm over the winter. But it grew wonderfully and not a single fig.
Okay. Now, where is the fig tree? What part of the country?
Oh, it's in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
Okay. So how many years has it been in the ground?
This is its third year.
Okay. The years that you did not protect it, did it suffer winter injury? Did it die back?
I don't really recall that. I know that this year, or, you know, this winter when I wrapped it up, it was much bigger. And the tips of all the branches did brown.
Okay. Now, you said you wrapped it with burlap and you filled it with leaves. What exactly did you do?
Well, you know, I was driving around with a friend in King of Prussia, and this older gentleman had like a number of these trees in his yard, and he wrapped a 3-foot radius around the tree and stuffed the entire thing with leaves.
Okay. Okay. So good. So you didn't actually wrap the tree. You drove some stakes into the ground and wrapped some burlap around the stakes.
Yeah. I have bamboo stakes that.
Okay. That's good. That's good. Now, you should realize, and as he should realize, you can't keep these things warm outdoors over the winter. So filling it with leaves, I don't think it caused any problems, but that can allow rodents to get in and gnaw away at the bark. So just the burlap alone to break the winter wind should be all that you need. So you haven't been pruning it at all.
I cut it back, was kind of angry with it because it wouldn't produce this year.
Okay.
And the branches were like falling over. They're so big and heavy with leaves.
Okay. And when did you do this?
Pretty recently.
Oh, okay. Well, that ruins any chance of a late crop of figs. You know, these figs are a Mediterranean plant. It wouldn't be unusual for a plant to put its figs out like next week. So you jumped the gun. Had you pruned it in previous years?
I had not. The summer after the very first year I put it in, it did produce fruit.
Okay.
But it was a small bush, and maybe it produced like 5.
Okay. So you've got it in a protected corner.
Yep.
Are you feeding it or mulching it?
I'm not feeding it, and I have all my gardens, I apply a black mulch.
Well, that stuff is chipped up pallets from China that have been spray painted.
Oh.
So I would not use dyed mulch anywhere, period. It's wood trash. It's dyed to conceal its former life as pressure-treated wood or as shipping pallets or as construction debris. That stuff is total junk. So that's one thing you can do. Now, you should never prune a plant this time of year, so you should go out and apologize to it. Here's what I'm going to suggest. Let's give it one more year. Get rid of any mulch near the fig. Just let the fig go for the rest of the year. I'm very pleased to hear you haven't fed it. Do the thing with the burlap and the stakes again. Don't put any leaves in. Just make a little windbreak around it. And then in the spring, you probably noticed this since you've had it for a couple of years. In the spring, it's obvious when the plant starts to grow again, right?
Right.
I want you to, right after that, like a week after it starts to grow again, I want you to go out with a pair of pruners, and I want you to open up the tree. I want you to take out some of the bigger branches, and I want you to trim back the ends of every branch. Figs produce best when they're trimmed back in the spring. Pruning stimulates growth, and there's something about figs especially that they love that springtime haircut. And that encourages them to put on fruit. So right now, get rid of the mulch. Make sure you do the wrapping, no leaves over the winter. And then in the spring, give it a good pruning all around. And I think you'll get a lot of fruit that next summer.
Well, I look forward to a banner year of figs, and I will definitely implement those ideas.
All right. Good luck, Lisa.
Okay, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who planted, quote, green peppers that there is no such thing. Hot or sweet, all peppers mature from green to a beautiful red, yellow, orange, or sometimes even chocolate color when ripe. So if truly sweet peppers you wish to taste, let those green fruits color up before picking. Just don't go slapping the hand of your unripe fruit-picking spouse just yet, because we'll be right back with lots of your fabulous phone calls and a garden full of wasps and lots of fruits and flowers. I'm Fruity Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops of salad greens, broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. A listener from California has a landscape and garden filled with wasps. It's got to be a bad thing, doesn't it? We'll find out after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Becky, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks.
Oh, thank you, Becky. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am just fine, thank you. And where is Becky good?
I am in Ocean View, New Jersey. It's kind of outside Ocean City, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. On the southern shore.
Yes.
Southern New Jersey. Yes. Okay.
Yep.
What can we do for Becky down the shore?
I have an off-the-ground barrel composter, and I discovered a few weeks ago that it seems to be infested with ticks. I think my husband, when he was raking leaves, put some of the extra leaves in there just to add to it, and it seems as though there's ticks inside. I haven't, you know, really reached in there and been able to check, but there was a bunch of what seemed like baby ticks crawling on the outside when I was able to turn it and spin it around. So I just was wondering what I could do about that naturally.
Okay, so these little creatures had 8 legs.
Yes. I did a little bit of research, and I was able to sort of crunch them. They were really tiny.
Yeah.
And I was able to sort of crunch them with, like, my fingernail. They weren't like those little red sort of mite-looking things.
No. Just the opposite nail. So you were able to crush them.
Yeah, but they snapped almost.
Typically, if you can crush it, it's not a tick. Ticks are...
Okay, even when they're really, really tiny like that.
Yeah. I think they always have a very hard shell. And, I can't imagine that your husband is guilty here. Leaves are what we want to put into a composter the most. It's really just the fall leaves that become compost. And he did shred them, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, one thing you want to be doing is shredding your leaves. Now, interestingly enough, all the things that I use to control ticks around my landscape are mostly to keep them off of me. And ticks are not going to survive very long without a host. Do you have mice in the area or something like that?
Yeah, we do pretty much live on the woods, and we have about 5 acres next to us and then another acre behind us.
Okay.
We live on about an acre.
Okay. So I would recommend you purchase a product called Tick Tubes. You know, normally we don't recommend products specifically, but there's really nothing better than this to keep tick populations down. These are tubes that are stuffed with little cotton balls filled, and the cotton balls have been soaked in permethrin, which is a synthetic form of the botanical insecticide made from chrysanthemum leaves. And these tick tubes are very clever. Mice, who are the prime vectors of ticks, will take the cotton balls, use them to line the nest, and this pesticide, which is a very potent against ticks, all the mice that come into that nest, the ticks on them are killed immediately, especially the small ticks, the very dangerous ticks.
Okay.
But you don't introduce the pesticide to the environment. It doesn't even hurt the mice. And these things have been shown to clear areas of 95% of the ticks. Now, what I would suggest, if you think your compost is truly infested with ticks or mites, or, you know, there are a lot of mite-like creatures that are part of the composting process that help organic matter break down. If you want to make sure that there's no ticks, dry it out. Ticks require absolute moist conditions. If you dump this half-finished compost out someplace where it's going to be sunny, where there's like a dry surface behind it, the ticks will either die or go away.
Okay.
But they are creatures of dampness. They require a lot of moisture, which is one of the simplest ways to keep ticks from around your landscape is to keep things dry, not allow damp, brushy areas to remain near where people go. I'm not certain they are ticks, but obviously you do want to be careful, and it sounds like you're in a region that has a lot of ticks. So I would take a look at these tick tubes. I spread these things around in the spring and the fall and haven't been bitten since I started using them like a decade
ago. Oh, great. Where do you get them? Do you make them yourself? Or
No. Just go online and look up tick tubes. You theoretically could make them, but I don't like the idea of people handling pesticide. I like the idea they come inside the little cardboard tubes. They won't hurt you. They won't hurt your pets. They don't hurt the environment, but they wipe out ticks. It's just fascinating. And as to your compost, dry it out, and that'll get rid of any problems.
Okay.
And then recompost it again in the fall when you got more leaves. But make sure your husband shreds those leaves.
All right. I'll have them do that.
All right, Beck.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your help.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-346-9499. Edgar, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, Edgar. How are you?
Good. Trying to enjoy the decent Oklahoma summer that I've been provided.
And you are in, I'm going to guess, Oklahoma City or Norman?
Norman.
Okay, very good. All right, what can we do for Edgar and Norman?
My main tomato issue that I've consistently found with me and my friends' gardens is that they start to look kind of coppery, and on the back there's little white specks, and I've never seen any bugs really crawling around on them, and I haven't really found out if it's a disease or it's a plant issue, and it always starts on the bottom leaves and works its way up, but tomatoes being tomatoes, they always find another shoot that is healthy, but it's just a consistent problem, and I did one time find just an all-in-3-in-1 herbicide that was a...
Okay, now, Edgar, you just said herbicide. That would be what you would spray when you were done with your tomatoes.
I meant to say pesticide. It was weird. It was a fungicide, pesticide, and one other thing, and it was mostly just neem oil, and that seemed to work, but the thing is, we're still not quite sure what it is. It's just a weird kind of like almost netting in a copper color, and then the leaves just turn brown and die at the bottom.
Okay. Now, luckily, you used neem oil, which is totally harmless. It could only help your plants. It won't harm them. Now, you're growing tomatoes in Oklahoma, which is very stressful if you follow like the East Coast growing season. You know, your summers are legendarily hot and dry, and your winds are just frightening. So, you know, I'm hoping you start your tomatoes much earlier than I do, and maybe even start a second run to grow them into the fall.
Yes, that's what I've been doing. Usually I start them in March, and then I just started another batch around this time about 2 days ago.
Okay.
I think.
Raised beds or flat ground?
Raised.
Okay. And are you growing your tomatoes in the same spot year after year?
No. The thing is, I moved into a new spot, so all of our tomatoes, including my friend's tomatoes, are all in new, untouched ground, essentially.
Okay. Good. What are your raised beds filled with?
A little bit of compost, a little bit of vermiculite, and then some topsoil, compost, mulch on top.
Okay. Well, nothing bad there. What time of year does this problem show up?
Definitely by July.
Okay, when it starts heating up.
Mm-hmm.
Are the tomatoes in full sun?
Yes.
Okay. I think you are showing signs of nothing more or less than heat stress, because this is happening to your friend's tomatoes at the same time of year as well, right?
Yes.
Now, typically, when you say, are there white spots on the fruit, and when you cut into the fruit, is there a layer of like nasty white?
No, not at all. It's just on the leaves and the white. It's more like white little specks on the bottom. And I thought maybe there was some kind of spider mite that was white, but I've rubbed them off and they don't move. It's just like as if someone kind of dusted them with these little white specks.
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if you weren't correct in your intuition. A hot and dry climate like Oklahoma is going to breed spider mites like mad. So one thing, if this is only affecting the leaves and not the fruit, stop complaining, okay, because it's not a big problem. And then the other thing I would suggest is to get just a basic pressurized sprayer and fill it with plain water. And mist the plants down, especially the places where you see these. If they are spider mites, the cure for them is moisture. They can't stand humidity. They like it hot and dry. And the hotter and drier it gets, the more they can multiply. And you don't want them to get out of control. So try misting the plants down in the morning. And then the most important thing you can do is to somehow try to see if there's a way to provide these plants some afternoon shade if you're going to try to grow them through, like, the grueling weeks, the 6 weeks of July and August, where you guys can do a real good imitation of Arizona some years.
Yeah.
And I know tomatoes are rated as full sun, but that's like for Maine and Pennsylvania, where you are in the middle of the summer, they would love to have shade after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And you would not believe the improvement in quality and production you'll get. But I think those are the basic answers. Give these things a couple of sprays in the morning. Try to give them some afternoon shade, and I think the results are going to be dramatic. Okay?
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, Edgar. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. When an abundance of wasps is not a problem. You Bet Your Garden producer, Alexis Landis, please get us started by reading off this week's question.
Thanks, Mike. We heard from another Alexis in Sherman Oaks, California, who writes, I have an organic garden and shun the use of pesticides. This has attracted many birds and insects, which has helped with pollination of flowers, fruit, and vegetables. However, in the past month, I've seen a huge rise in the number of wasps of all shapes and sizes. I put out 2 traps, which supposedly attract all types of wasps, but neither has caught even one. I've looked for nests in the eaves of my house, but haven't seen any. I read that some wasps nest in the ground, which makes me very nervous about my dogs rolling around in the lawn. I would really like to bring the wasp population under control without the use of pesticides. Mike, is there anything she can do? Normally, I'd ask if there's anything she needs to do, but she's talking about wasps, not the native bees you always explain are harmless.
Well, wasps and hornets, like mud daubers and yellow jackets, are typically very aggressive, and they really can be dangerous. But I'm always suspicious when these kind of emails don't mention anybody actually getting stung. So I emailed her back and asked directly if anybody has been stung. We also asked what the wasps were doing and to physically describe 1 or 2 types. Alexis, what was her reply?
She says that no one has been stung. She describes some of the wasps as very thin, with yellow and black stripes and long back legs. She says they float around the grass and are attracted to her flowers.
So nobody's getting stung, there's no aggression, and they're visiting flowers. That all leads me to suspect that she does have native bees, a huge category that includes familiar faces like bumblebees, but also includes creatures that don't look anything like our typical concept of a bee. There are native bees that look a lot like wasps, and others that look like flies, beetles, and other insects.
You've said on past shows that you've seen dozens of different kinds of native bees in your own garden, and she's in California, so it's possible that she has ones you've never seen, right?
Absolutely. There can be a huge difference in the insects you'll find on opposite sides of the Rockies.
But this is all easy for you to say. You've gotten very used to your native bees being gentle, non-stinging pollinators. And she adds that her big concern is, quote, the ones flying near the grass, which makes me think they might be yellow jackets. Mike, aren't you the least bit concerned she might have yellow jackets? Are there yellow jackets on the West Coast?
Oh, yeah. And the Western yellow jacket is just as dangerous and aggressive as the Eastern ones who make our picnics close to impossible in August. But if insects that look like yellow jackets aren't being aggressive, they're not yellow jackets. So I asked her to look at some images of yellow jackets online to see if she really thinks they match up.
And
she found a picture online that she says is a perfect match with her lawn huggers. Now, we'll post a link to that photo with this question of the week. But I can tell you right now, the colors are very yellow jacket-like, and it does have that distinctive skinny wasp waist. But it also has very long back legs. It's clearly not a yellow jacket.
So you researched it and?
Oh yeah, like I got lots of time this year. No, I was battling some really nasty weeds out in the raspberries and asked her to do it for me.
And?
And she identified it pretty fast. Turns out that it's an amazing creature known as a pollen wasp that lives on the pollen and nectar of flowers, just like bees.
Don't you always say that all wasps are carnivores, that they mostly eat other insects?
Yes, I've always said that. And that just shows why you should never use the word all in this business. But it turns out that these creatures are extremely unusual in the wasp world, almost unique. The Wikipedia entry on them notes that their behavior is much more like that of native bees than any kind of wasp, and it points out that some California species, quote, bear a remarkable resemblance to yellow jackets.
So there are wasps that feed exclusively on pollen? Wasps that look like yellow jackets and act like bees? How did you not know this right away?
Hey, there may be only one true species of this wasp in the entire country. Most pollen wasps are found in or around South Africa. And new discoveries are one of the best parts of this job. I was editor of Organic Gardening magazine for 7 years, will have hosted this show for 15 years this October, have written a half dozen or so books, and I still learn new things all the time. This is such an amazingly diverse and interesting planet we live on. Imagine wasps that float like a yellow jacket and pollinate like a bee. Well, that sure was an interesting introduction to an amazing and underappreciated pollinator, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to more information on pollinating wasps, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to feed me to some of the more common kinds of wasps if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line. And perhaps you might check voice to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website, which once again is youbetyourgarden.org. It's where you can also listen to the show, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's Internet Illuminati. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at our Facebook page. Our own team of harmless but somewhat frightening pollinators includes editor Al Banks, production assistants Jolie Higazi and Cecily Garber, and Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm always a risk to sting Mike McGrath, and I'll see you again next week. Are snails just as bad as slugs? And are their numbers on the rise? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll take a close look at these mantle-wearing mollusks, plus your fabulous phone calls.